Good evening. In the news tonight, the Minneapolis officer who held George Floyd down with his knee as Floyd pleaded he couldn't breathe has been charged with murder. New York City is set for Phase 1 reopening, and police reform advocates from Vocal New York rallied against police brutality against people of color during this pandemic. With these and other stories in New York, I'm Linda Perry, and this is some of the news for Friday, May 29th, 2020. Governor Andrew Cuomo, in his daily COVID briefing, says the facts are good.
Number of hospitalizations are down. Net change in total hospitalizations is down. Intubations are down. And the new cases are down to 152, which is a dramatic drop for us. At one point, you know, we'll never get to zero. What is the bottom of the curve? I don't know, but we're close. And the number of deaths, thank the good Lord, continues to decline. It's at its lowest level ever of 67 deaths. And we hope and we pray that that continues to be the case. The question is on reopening. And as everyone knows, we've been looking at the numbers, looking at the metrics in terms of different regions across the state. The overall state was hit the hardest by this virus, and we're coming back as the smartest.
To enter phase one of reopening, New York City must stay below a certain number of hospitalizations, intensive care unit patients, percentage of people testing positive for COVID-19, as well as bring contact tracing up to speed. The governor says New York City is on track to enter phase one reopening on about June 8th. That's 1 week from Monday. That means construction, manufacturing, wholesale, and non-essential retail businesses would all be allowed to reopen. Businesses are required to follow social distancing, facial coverings, and health monitoring guidelines. Cuomo says New York City is on track to meet all these metrics.
Hospital capacity of 70%. We want 30% hospital capacity, so God forbid something goes wrong, we have the hospital beds. We want to make sure we have the stockpile of PPE. We're not going through what we went through last time, searching the globe for ventilators and masks and gowns. I mean, that we learned that lesson the hard way. This entire country did, but it'd be madness to go through that again. We have to have the testing in place, which we do. The contact tracing is being brought up to speed. We believe all of these things can be done next week, the MTA preparations for reopening. But we think all of this can be done by next week, and we would be on track to open the week afterwards.
The governor says New York is focusing on hotspots, which are in the poorer communities of the city.
Follow the facts. We have the data. We can tell you by zip code where the new cases are coming from. They are in New York City, their outer borough, they're more Brooklyn, they're more the Bronx, they're lower income areas, they're more minority areas, and we know where they are by zip code. Some of these zip codes, you have double the infection rate in those zip codes that you have citywide. Citywide, the infection rate is about 19%, 20%. In some zip codes, it's over 40% the infection rate. We know where these zip codes are. Next week, let's do a full court press on these zip codes. And we've been talking to our colleagues in the city, speaking to the mayor about this. Next week, hospitals, PPE, get that contact tracing up. MTA will finish their final preparations, but then hotspots, hotspots, hotspots.
Meanwhile, five regions across New York State will enter phase two of reopening.
Phase two is all office-based jobs, real estate services, retail reopening, barbershops, hair salons reopening. That's all part of phase two. There's specific guidance on how to reopen in phase two. It's not just open the doors and everybody has a party. It's 50% occupancy in office buildings, signage on markers, et cetera, no meetings without social distancing, Don't share food or beverages. I mean, I see people all the time sharing food and beverages. You really don't want to do that now. But again, the specific guidance for every area. Retail stores, 50% occupancy, wear the face covering. A store owner can tell you they don't want you to come in if you're not wearing a face covering.
The governor says wear a mask, use hand sanitizer, socially distance. He says it's that simple to keep the infection rate down. In other news, the Minneapolis officer who was seen on video kneeling on the neck of George Floyd, a handcuffed black man who died in custody after pleading he couldn't breathe, has been arrested and charged with murder. Hennepin County Attorney Mike Freeman says Derek Chauvin, the Minneapolis police officer who knelt on George Floyd's neck, was charged with third-degree murder and manslaughter. This after his office gathered enough evidence to prove the charges beyond a reasonable doubt. He didn't have immediate details, but said a criminal complaint would be made available later. The charges come after 3 days of protests, which had been escalating in violence. No word yet on the officers who stood by as George Floyd was calling out for his mother and saying, "I can't breathe," in anguish. In a brief online appearance today, the former vice president blamed systemic racism, which he called an open wound on American society, for Floyd's death. He says it's time for deep and lasting police reform.
You know, I just had an opportunity to speak with the Floyd family, and a group of them, most of them. They're a close, decent, honorable family, loving one another. And once again, we had the words, heard the words, and they heard them, "I can't breathe." An act of brutality so elemental, it did more than deny one more black man in America his civil rights and his human rights. It denied him of his very humanity. It denied him of his life. Depriving George Floyd is, as it deprived Eric Garner, one of the things every human being must be able to do: breathe. So simple, so basic, so brutal. You know, with the same thing happened with Aubrey, the same thing happened with Breonna Taylor, the same thing with George Floyd. You know, we've spoken their names aloud. We cried them out in pain and in horror. We chiseled them into a long, suffering hearts. And they're the latest additions to the endless list of stolen potential wiped out unnecessarily. You know, it's a list that dates back more than 400 years. Black men, black women, black children. The original sin of this country still stains our nation today. And sometimes we manage to overlook it. We just push forward with a thousand other tasks in our daily life. But it's always there. In weeks like this, we see it plainly that we're a country with an open wound. And none of us can turn away. None of us can be silent. None of us can any longer can we hear the words, "I can't breathe," and do nothing. You know, we can't fail victims like, you know, what Martin Luther King called the appalling silence of good people. Everyday African-Americans go about their lives with a constant anxiety and trauma, wondering, who'll be next? Imagine if every time your husband or son, wife or daughter left the house, you feared for their safety from bad actors and bad police. Imagine if you had to have that talk with your child about not asserting your rights, taking the abuse handed out to them so they could make it home. Imagine having police called on you just for sitting in Starbucks or renting an Airbnb or watching birds. You know, this is the norm black people in this country deal with. They don't have to imagine it. The anger and frustration and the exhaustion is undeniable. But that's not the promise of America. It's long past time that we made the promise of this nation real for all people. You know, this is no time for incendiary tweets.
Presumptive Democratic nominee, former Vice President Joe Biden. The incendiary tweet was from Donald Trump in response to the violence in Minneapolis, adding fuel to racial fires. He called violent protesters outraged by the death of George Floyd in police custody thugs. He threatened to take action to bring the city of Minneapolis under control. And he tweeted that when the looting starts, the shooting starts, which Twitter quickly flagged as violating rules against glorifying violence. Later, Trump said what he meant was that looting leads to shooting and that nobody should have any problem with this other than the haters and those looking to cause trouble on social media. Meanwhile, back in New York City, at Mayor Bill de Blasio's COVID briefing, he received some backlash from reporters after his tweet urged criminal charges be filed immediately against the police officers involved in George Floyd's death.
Next, we have Jeff Mays from the New York Times.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor. I just had a quick question. I saw that you tweeted yesterday about the police situation in Minnesota with George Floyd. You said that the officers needed to be charged immediately. But there's been some criticism of your remarks given the history of the Eric Garner case in New York City and the fact that it took 5 years for the officer involved in that case to even be removed from the force. So wanted to see if you thought there was any irony in calling for those officers and Minnesota to be charged, where a situation in New York that is seen as similar, you did not call for that officer to be charged immediately.
On this horrible, just very, very painful situation in Minneapolis, Jeff, I watched that video and my heart broke. It was, you know, to watch someone before your very eyes, and that, you know, I could not believe the officer's lack of concern, and it was horrifying, and it just can't go on this way. So the fact is, I think the authorities in Minneapolis were right to say, you know, this is something that needed to be acted on immediately, and I've said that from this point on in the city of New York, we're going to act immediately as well. This kind of thing just can't happen.
Next, we have Dave Evans from ABC 7.
Following up on what Jeff asked you from the Times about the case in Minneapolis, I think Jeff was asking, do you see the irony in this case versus the Eric Garner case in that you wanted the process to play out? And that took 5 years, yet here in the Minneapolis case, you've already asked for prosecution of these officers.
Dave, look, the bottom line here is, I've been really clear about the fact we made a mistake. I made a mistake in believing the U.S. Department of Justice would do its job. And I will be very blunt and clear about that. When the city took over, there was due process. There was a trial. Our police commissioner made a decision. It was the right decision. The thing I feel very clearly in retrospect is we should have ignored the Department of Justice because what they did was unconscionable in not acting and just moved ahead. And that's what we will do from now on. Absolutely.
Next, we have Yoav from the city.
Yeah, good morning, Mr. Mayor. I just wanted to ask you if Eric Garner was white, do you think that he would be alive today?
Absolutely.
Mayor Bill de Blasio on Eric Garner, very much on the minds of New Yorkers in light of the death of George Floyd and others at the hands of police. And you're listening to the news on listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio, WBAI New York. Today, Vocal New York held a rally. They addressed police brutality against people of color. They held a banner which reads, "Public health equals public safety." Another sign reads, "No racist police." Comrade Don Curtis from Vocal New York, an organizer, wants resources to be used to uplift communities rather than for an increase in the budget of the NYPD. He echoes what Biden said earlier, but from the standpoint of a black man living in New York City. He says we're fed up and tired.
We are also here to protest and address the issue of the New York City budget, proposing to give the New York City Police Department $6 billion. We want that money to be diverted to social causes. in this city. We have homelessness that is rampant. We have mental illness cases. We have people coming home from prison without any social services. We have an LGB community that need these services. We have youth leagues and organizations that need these services. The NYPD has enough funds and is armed to start World War III. They appear to use only live rounds against people of color. During this pandemic, we've noticed a harsh disparity in treatment against people of color. We are fed up. The nation is in a national crisis now because of police conduct against people of color. We would not stand or tolerate for it anymore. Every man and every woman and every child has a right, a God-given right of the first law of nature, which is self-preservation. We intend to ensure that they get that right, live that right, and live and die of natural causes, not from NYPD bullets and brutality. Anytime I have to turn the television on and see NYPD officers assaulting my black queens in front of their children, we've gone too damn far. The NYPD is out of control. We are here to put them in check. We don't want them to get the $6 billion, and the funds that they do have, we're requesting that they be diverted and given to social causes. This city needs the money for social causes. In order for you to be a humane society and live out the true meaning of the Constitution, state, and federal, then you must recognize that your taxpayers pay your salary, that your taxpayers must be taken care of with these funds also. We're not here to pay police overtime excesses that they use and abuse just to get extra funds in their accounts. We're not here to be brutalized by the people that we pay to protect and serve. We are simply fed up with it. We just want to have a moment of silence at the beginning, and we'll have one at the end for George Floyd, who was murdered by four racist police officers, former police officers, okay? Everybody witnessed it. The world has witnessed it. So let's give that brother King a moment of silence. No justice. No justice. No justice. Black. 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 And you better recognize that fact.
Tatjana Hill is also an organizer with Vocal New York. She puts out statistics which show that communities of color are being targeted by police and that resources which could uplift communities are being spent on policing rather than on education, health, and other badly needed resources.
Even as crime rates plummet, New York City is spending more on policing than health, than homeless services, than youth development, and workforce development combined. That's wrong and unacceptable. Overinvestment in policing and underinvestment in public health, housing, and communities is why our elders have been so devastated by COVID-19. Black and Latinx people in New York have been dying at twice the rate of everyone else. Social services were stretched thin before this pandemic, and now an even larger portion of New York City residents will rely on social services and public infrastructure to survive. We need a fair budget that protects our frontline and essential workers, that begins to address the disgusting racial inequalities that are killing Black and Brown people at shocking rates. We need homeless people in safer housing. We need permanent housing for our homeless. We have over 200,000 empty luxury apartments in New York City and 89,000 homeless people in this city. We are one of the richest cities with the most millionaires and billionaires in this country, and yet we have no resources for our poor and our homeless. Now more than ever, New York needs to set the right priorities in our budget. Thousands of lives are depending on it. Mayor, Governor, you said the people matter. You care about the lives of the people. What people? Are you picking and choosing the people whose lives matter, or do all of our lives matter? The New York Police Department's $6 billion budget is going to different infrastructures, but not where we need it. In 2018, New York City paid out $230 million of our tax dollars to settle lawsuits against the NYPD, mostly for police misconduct. We are planning to spend $332 million to keep our cops in our schools, armed and ready to fuel the school-to-prison pipeline, even though our schools are closed, facing over $800 million in cuts for education budget. The mayor wants to hire 2,300 new police officers, despite the fact that 90% of the arrests for violating social distancing have been towards Black and Latinx people. We have seen multiple videos of police using brutal violence and making arrests in Manhattan, Brooklyn, the Bronx, and Queens. The DAs in those boroughs are refusing to prosecute social distancing arrests, though. The NYPD just spent $500,000 on brand new drones to surveil New Yorkers. That would have bought almost 264,000 N95 masks for nurses, doctors, and EMT, who are reusing their disposable masks over and over again. Of the 374 summonses issued in regards to social distancing, 300 of those went to Black and Latino people. The New York City Commissioner Shea acknowledged that there are disparities in arrests and summons, but it doesn't stem from racist policing. Can you tell me if that makes sense to you? Do you logically believe that there are disparities in race, but there's no racial policing? How does that work? He stated that he refused to have his department called a racist police department. If we don't begin to have real conversations about the dynamics of race and the systems that perpetuate it, such as the police department, we will never have a just system in America. We will never have racial equity. Thank you for joining us. My name is Tatiana Hill. I'm an organizer at Vocal New York. No justice! No justice!
Shalom, peace, assalamu alaikum, niyamah. My name is Dr. Jacinta Jaggers Arnell. I'm a systems science industrial engineer resident in training, a graduate of Binghamton University. Many of you may look at me and say, well, what does she know about poverty, police brutality? Well, guess what? I grew up from Brownsville, Brooklyn. By the time that I was 16 years old, I attended over 20 funerals. 20 funerals. And so I stand before you as a privilege to represent my friends who are no longer here. The day that I went back to my community and saw the balloons, the candles, the dying, the scared, I wanted to know who is representing us. Where are we? So I stand before everyone and I ask not only the city council, the state and assembly, and the federal government, but I also ask the economic mobility Black people who have achieved the benefits of their affirmative action, where are you? How do you stand in the gap? So I stand with many titles: entrepreneur, philanthropist, community activist, community leader, global traveler, global project manager, global continuous leader, Fortune 500 leader. But the most title of all of them is mommy. Mommy, I stand before the people behind me representing the next generation. I stand before you and beside you to represent my brothers and sisters who's been incarcerated for nonviolent crimes and face the corruption in the criminal prison system. The criminal system doesn't begin mass incarceration. It starts at family court, where we call foster care transitional care, when it's really federal prison incarceration of children. Okay? And as a mother, I am disappointed to not hear anyone's platform about child welfare and what's happening to our children and not speaking to their biological mothers or their biological fathers. So when we talk about the budget, let's not rewrite history. Let's not repeat history. Let's not redefine this history. I stand before you to re-engineer the future, to redesign the future, to renovate the future, to create the future. I hear conversations about standardized test performance and we can't perform. I laugh at that. Not only can't we perform, we will outperform. Yeah. Yeah. Okay? But we have not been given the same opportunities as everyone else. My parents had to make sacrifices
so I can stand on their shoulders to get where I am today. And I honor them and I thank them. But there are other people who will look down upon them and be ashamed of their parents. I hold them up because if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't be here where I am today. So I ask you, when we look at the budget and we talk about policing, incarceration does not mean public safety. Incarceration does not mean equality. Incarceration does not mean the advancement of human civilization. Because we are the cornerstone of civilization.
Yeah, yeah.
Vocal New York closed out their rally today with another moment of silence for the latest victim of police brutality, this time in Minneapolis, George Floyd. And that's some of the news for this Friday, May 29th, 2020. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.